What's going on, everyone? We are back. That is correct. We are back with another episode in the same week. Two episodes. We didn't plan for this to happen. We had a special guest yesterday. We had to switch up the time because we couldn't. The time zones are a little different, and because of it, how long the conversation went, we actually end up doing two episodes. So this is our normal episode. Yesterday was the special episode. That being said, we have a special guest on this episode as well. Before we do that, let me reintroduce us. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Hello, everyone.
And with us today is Charles Singletary Jr. What's up, Charles?
Greetings, greetings, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I am. First of all, I'm super excited that you were, willing to come on the show. Being a smaller show, because I want to say we started in the midst of COVID last year, and we haven't gotten our, our fan legs, if you will, just yet. So having you and a couple of other special guests that we have had has been really dope. Because, as when I was doing previous podcasts where it was like, a little bit bigger audience, it was much easier to get developers and interesting people to jump in. But it has been a little bit tough with our current show, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're on YouTube and things of that nature. Not gonna get into all that, but it's just to say that we appreciate you stopping by because I know you have a pretty busy schedule actually with doing
A little
the
bit.
and actually I wanted to kind of talk to you a little bit about that before we jump into our normal stuff because I know that you went from I guess the game journalism side to the game PR side. Like, how did that even happen?
Well, it was kind of a rescue mission, honestly. I was doing I did game journalism for, I want to say like five, no, longer than that, about 7 years, 7 or 8 years.
Word.
A chunk of that was not getting paid,
Ooh, I feel you.
but I was with one of the publications that I was writing for free. They were paying for like to go to events and things like that, so that was valuable. Helping out with travel as much as they could.
That's what's up.
And that was the coalition.com, so shout out to them. Super dope people over
Yes.
there. But went from that to freelancing, which was its own version of the journalism nightmare. And then I got a couple staff positions. And the short version is I was in a really, really bad staff position with like narcissistic management, gaslighting, really, really shitty people, like just really pure, terrible human beings running the show.
Yep, been
And
there.
yeah, and as I started to like identify that, I got to a point where I was just like, all right, well, it's harming my relationship, it's harming my health. I don't want to get out of this because I felt like it was one of the few shots I had to be like a part of the industry. And but it got so bad that I was like, all right, well, I'm good giving this up. I'm done with this. If I got to go back to work in retail, whatever, I just got to get out of here, take a step back to move forward, essentially. But a couple people reached out to me and kind of were a bridge doing some freelance. Like I took a significant pay cut, but it didn't feel that bad because it was just I was working with much better people for a short period. But some of the relationships I had built, some of the people that were in PR started like talking to me about it and telling me more about it. And I didn't think I was qualified for it, but as I talked to them more about it, journalism is very similar to it. A lot of the things that I was already doing, I translated well to it. And so I started keeping an eye on PR jobs and like the deeper kind of philosophy in the shift was that I was tired of being a critic. And I think that's largely because of the places I landed in, because I know that if I'd gone to the right place, I wouldn't have felt that way. But the path that I took just kind of burned me out on reporting the news and critiquing things.
I feel you.
It was just really unhealthy spaces to be working in. And I was just like, if I'm going to be in games, I feel like PR makes perfect sense for me because I get to promote things. I don't have to keep up with every single thing or feel like I need to keep up with every single new thing that gets released, which that was a ridiculous revelation. But if I get a chance, I'll talk about that a little bit later. But
word.
So I kept an eye out for some PR gigs and some people pointed me towards one, but it was only in Canada. And
yes,
they kept running it. They kept running it. And I was like, I really wish they would open it up to remote. And then they did.
Nice.
And that's where I am now, Evolve PR. Funny story. This could be like a little bit of motivation to anybody listening. I intended to withdraw my application.
Oh.
And I forgot to do it. And it was just it was an imposter syndrome moment, essentially. Mm-hmm. I applied, got through the first part, and I was like, I'm not ready to be here yet. I need to get some more experience. I need to just get a different job, maybe continue doing freelance with a few people. I was like, let me just pull out of this and then come back to it when I'm more serious. And I straight up forgot to pull the application and went about my little weekend and ended up getting into the final part of it on that Monday, I think.
Nice.
And then got the job.
Yeah, that sounds like, crazy.
Very glad that I forgot to withdraw that.
No joke. Man, Evolve is one of my favorite PR, just work like on the journalism side, like working with them over the years, has been just great. Like they do thing, and not to, you know, shit on all my other PR people, but I'm just saying that I had such a good experience and I have such a good experience with them that even when I kind of, you know, went all freelance, because like I was writing for one particular, my site essentially, and when I went to switch over, they were still willing to like send me code and just work with me, even though I didn't have a home per se, right? And but then even, you know, outside of that, just how honest and hardworking they are, which was a good mesh, like dealing with other people. Well, you know, I don't have to go into that, but where it can be tricky with the people that you work with. And so when I found out that you started working with them, I was like, yes, like this is such a good, you know what I mean? Like a good fit. So yeah, I kind of wanted to, you know, ask like how that went. I have seen a couple of other, of our peers kind of make that transition as well in PR. And I thought it was fascinating. Cause it just kind of like with you thinking like you're not qualified. It's like, man, is that something that could even be like, how do you do that? How do you go back and forth? But apparently it's happening.
It's definitely happening.
The editor in chief of Game Informer, or the previous editor in chief, went over to EA. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay. I see what y'all doing.
Yeah. It's, I don't know if it was a situation where I'm just not asking the question, so I'm not getting the answers, or people are keeping information close to the chest, but I learned as I transitioned, or even before, that it seems to be the path that a lot of people are taking. Like when, like Sean,
yeah,
shout out to him. He was also journalism switching to PR, and he was one of the people that kind of like drilled into me that you're totally capable of doing this job and like going for these roles, because he did the exact same thing. And it was so much stuff that he pointed out to me that just was like, well, shit, that's common sense. Or it feels like common sense now that you say it like that.
Right.
Just the job security, for one. Journalism is very, very much a roller coaster ride in the experiences that I've had. Because no degree to speak of. I studied journalism at the University of Alabama for a year, but I dropped out from there, and just continued just writing on my own and then writing for other people's websites and just going from free to paid and pitching and stuff. But it's chaotic and you never, and I never knew where money would be coming from, basically.
Right.
Like there were very few moments where it felt really secure. And even when I got an actual role, I don't know, it might have just been me, just something in the back of my head. I always felt like the rug was going to get pulled out from under me at any time. Right. But Sean was breaking it down for me. He was like, look, man, like all these publications come and go. You know, a lot of people will get fired from publication, they get bought out by somebody, big or small or medium. But PR doesn't go anywhere because it's more studios, there's more games. The industry continues to grow at a pretty substantial pace, even to the point where some places are oversaturated, of course, but the work is always there for PR. And I had no idea why I never thought about that, but I was like, you're absolutely right. Especially as much as I see the emails that are coming in from PR, why did I never connect those dots and even think to work in that space? But yeah, a lot of people do it. It's a natural fit. It's a comfortable fit. And even from there, like, you know, the Game Informer guy going from EA, I'm at an agency with Evolve. I feel like, I mean, I'm a little biased, but I feel like it's one of the best PR agencies that's not like a first party group, right?
Yeah.
I was in the same situation as you where I was outside looking in working with Evolve. And that's why they were kind of one of the ones I wanted to work for, because I had such a great experience with them. And I've seen other people that even with just being on smaller teams or smaller games, move up into bigger roles with you know, publishers and jumping off to Ubisoft or something like that. I can't say that I have the whole thing figured out just yet.
right.
But it seems like this is definitely one of the main pathways to it, going from journalism to PR and to other things that you want to do. I've seen other people go from PR to game development. They're working on games. Somebody that used to work with Evolve, they just announced their game last week. And seeing that kind of stuff is super exciting for me, because I honestly 100% never thought that I would be able to get onto a game development team, but I kind of see, I'm seeing the matrix. I'm seeing the green letters and numbers now. I'm figuring it out. It's just, I got to increase my tool set and get there.
That's what's up. I am super excited for all the stuff that you guys are doing. And anything that's positive on Twitter, when I see it, I'm like, this is great, because yeah, Twitter. So,
I want to apologize for my Batman tweets. I know some people take them, you know, a certain type of way, not necessarily a positive thing.
The Batman shade is the funniest thing I have seen in a long time on Twitter, I swear, because it'd be so subtle. I'm like, oh, that's a gut punch right there. Like, so great, so great. Beyond, I guess, just talking about, you know, your new field, we wanted to discuss kind of what we've done this week that was exciting or interesting or, you know, whatever, which is kind of almost every week something interesting is happening because we're in COVID season. Yeah. And because of that, life is a little weird. With even just going, you know, from point A to point B, things are just odd. Like, for instance, I went to the store. My wife asked me to get some stuff, and I went out. And for whatever reason, you know, like you have like the switch on your keys that like open the door and things of that nature. Like, I guess there's a short, or maybe the battery's dead. I don't know. But I went to like open my door, and all the other locks on the car like went up, except for that one, except for the driver's seat. And so I go to open my door, and it's like it goes clink, and I can't get out. And so I'm like, okay. So I like, I close it, or, you know, cause it's like partially open. I close it, try to, you know, redo the lock, and then try to open it again. And it goes, it does the same thing, and I can't get out. And so if you can imagine, a black person with like a mask on his face going to a store and is struggling to get out of his own car, And the surrounding white people just looking at me like, what is going on over here? It's just like, it's just, this is not normal. It's just not normal stuff. This, that has been happening. Outside of that though, I did also, so two things, Tess, you know, we talked about, how we feel about Amazon. And oh. I got Amazon Prime because Coming to America, we wanted to talk about that on the show. Yeah. And, you know, they gave us a free month. But then I found out that A Different World is on Amazon Prime. Uh-huh. And now I am super considering keeping Amazon Prime. Because it's one of my favorite shows. And yeah. Just rewatching it has been such a blessing in the sense that, like, it's, first of all, it's positive black stuff. So there's that. Yeah. And then when they do tackle, like, racism, sexism, you know, they tackled AIDS, they tackle all these things. They do it in a way that's, like, unlike Family Matters, in a sense where they have their corny moments, but when they're serious, they're really good at it. And I was surprised. Every time I watch the show, I'm surprised at how well they tackled all these different issues with each episode. Very, very good. Good show. And so, like, before I go to bed, it's like, okay, let me get in a couple episodes. And so that's been pretty freaking awesome. I also watched earlier today, I watched Godzilla versus King Kong, and I'm not going to spoil any of it for anybody who hasn't watched it. But what I will say is I'm happy at what it is. Like, I was pleased. I was excited. Mm. It was entertaining. The humans still are just throwaway characters, but they actually did okay in this sense. Like, I wasn't annoyed all the time with the characters. Mm-hmm. There was a particular young lady who played, I'm not sure if she's really deaf or not, she played a deaf character, but she did a really good job, from at least from what I can see. And yeah, it was just, some of the acting and stuff was pretty good, you know, because usually it's like they say something bad, it's a one-liner, or you follow them doing, you know, silly stuff. Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things. I still don't like her character, but whatever. but the actual Godzilla and Kong punching each other, it was like WWE times 1,000. Like, literally grabbing the monster's head and, like, clotheslining him or ramming him through a building. Phenomenal. I wish I could have seen it in a theater as opposed to my phone, but it was great.
Oh, wow.
And so that's been my week. It's just been weird occurrences outside and a lot of good content being streamed. what about you, Tess?
I just have to comment, you know, there are times when we watch movies on our phones, but it's normally because we're at the doctor's office, or, you know, it's like, oh, I have 45 minutes in between these two things. I'm going to sit over here and watch this on my phone, like work, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
But, like, being forced to watch it on your phone because we can't go to the movie theaters is totally a different, like, this is weird.
Yeah, it's a different vibe for sure.
Yes.
Not okay. So another thing that I've noticed that is not okay, obviously during COVID, traffic has been amazing. There's barely any cars on the road. It's great. It's just kind of wonderful. You know, DC traffic is trash.
Right.
But, you know, it's been great. However, I've been noticing for the last, I would say, 2 weeks, that I guess people are starting to go back to work and school. And I don't like this one bit.
Wait.
No. I need everyone to go back home. Everyone. I need you all to go back home. I do not like the fact that it takes more than 12 minutes to get to work now. It's not okay. I do not appreciate the fact that the meters have been turned on the ramps to the highway. No. Okay. If I have to pause and wait for a green light to let me go down the ramp to the highway so I can join traffic, what kind of nonsense is this? For a whole year, I've been able to just careen onto the highway. And now all of a sudden, y'all want to make me pause? First of all, I'm not even the one driving. I'm in the backseat of an Uber. Okay, but still,
wow,
10 more seconds that I have to wait, and it's a pause, break, slow down, you know, like the G forces on my neck. You know how I have the discs problems with my neck? I don't appreciate any of it, and I need it to end. So, I need everybody to go back home, and school needs to end just so that I can get to where I need to be in a timely fashion. That's how I feel.
That's terrible, Tess.
But that's how I feel. Secondly, what other things did I do? I got an email, and the email said that I can schedule my COVID vaccine.
Awesome.
Nice. So, congratulations.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think that's pretty dope. Right? I'm like, yay. Oh my God. I can join the several, I don't know how many thousands, and get the chip implanted into my body. I'm broken.
Drive this season. Let's go.
Right?
I want to get it. I want to get it so I can travel. And it doesn't, this is the funny thing. I can say that I want to get it so I can travel and I'll be safe and da da da. I'm not traveling. I'm broke. So honestly,
I empathize.
I'm already vaccinated in the fact that I only go to work and home. I don't do anything with my life. I'm boring. And I've been basically exposed to COVID multiple times because there's been four people that I've worked with or live, I mean, work around that have all had COVID and in the last 3 months, and I still haven't gotten it. And so I think I'm immune. I'm the one human that's immune. So, so anyway, I'm like, I can get it now. They say I can get it. And I'm like, do I want to get it because I don't like getting sick? I don't know. Questions and choices. I have to think about that on my own. That's a personal problem.
But at least you got the email, though.
I did. And I feel like I'm part of a club.
That's what's up.
It does feel that way. It really does feel that way.
Yeah.
We are still waiting. I think my parents, my dad, he works for the state. And so he was able to kind of set it up so he could get the shot. And then my mom in a similar fashion. So it was like kind of like when my dad was in the military, like if there's anything that we needed, that he needed, they kind of passed it along to my mom. Right. And so they got their first shots last week. Mm-hmm. And I think my dad is getting his this week. And then my mom is scheduled for another time, but they haven't stamped like a date just yet. So she's still kind of waiting. But from all she said, it's, you know, they've been fine. It hasn't like affected them negatively. They're a little worried about the second shot, and with them being older, they're not as internet savvy as you know we are. And so, you know, they hear stuff. Granted, thank goodness they're not on Facebook, but they hear stuff, and so you know, we're able to kind of relay like, no, this is what it is, this is what it isn't. You could you can still transfer or whatever, but it you're safer with this. And so we had some conversations with them to kind of like, you know, make sure everything is cool. But yeah, I'm happy. I'm trying to plan a way that we can get it around you know, having young kids, it's a little, your timing has to be right for that to work. Because like, for instance, my son being 1 year old, he's getting vaccinations for other things right now.
Yeah.
And so he can't necessarily get that on top of it, of what he's getting. So it's like, do I want to get it now and then possibly? So it's like, it's weird, you know what I'm saying? In terms of how we are planning on, you know, trying to get it at the very least. Charles, what about you?
Shoot, with me, so, because you know COVID is a thing,
right?
The panty is outside. I already worked from home, but working from home with the pandemic is a whole other vibe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of how I spend my time outside is gonna sound super weird to people, and y'all just gonna have to accept me for who I am. But so like me and my girlfriend are buying a house. We're getting a house built, right?
Nice.
That's nice.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. And very excited for that. And one of our pastimes is going to the neighborhood where the house is being built, which is about 20 minutes away or so.
So you're stalking.
Essentially, but it's like, it's straight up, like, we will just be like, you want to just go for a ride by the house? And that's what we do, because we can't go, we really can't go anywhere else. We drive all the way over there. We are pretty sure all of the neighbors that we are going to have will be like, oh, so y'all are the ones that drove through here like twice a fucking week. at random points, at random times of day. We've already met one of our neighbors there, one of the families, but yeah, we do this a lot. And my girlfriend actually asked last week, I think, she was like, do we do this too much? And I was like, well, probably, but
you had to ask.
But like, I don't think we would be if the pandemic wasn't a thing, if COVID wasn't a thing.
I don't think
we'd be out there as often.
Look, I was, when we were getting our house, yes, I was driving up and down. I was like, I have kids. I need to know if this place is safe. Let me see what the neighbors do. What y'all up to? Y'all having a cookout? Hey, what's good? What's good? We moving in a month. Yeah, like even when we were getting apartment, like a new apartment, because we needed a bigger one, we would drive and be like, let's just check it out. Let's see what the vibe is like. Let's go at nighttime to see if it's different than the day. And you know, there was one place I went to, I'm not gonna lie, when we drove up, it was daylight. We drove up, mm-hmm. I parked and got out. It just the sky went black, and I was like, you know what?
Yeah, no.
I'm good. I've seen enough horror films. I am good. I just a bad vibe. But yeah, I'm pretty sure, especially with you getting a house built, I think it would be a desire to kind of see the neighborhood, kind of see the house in stages. Like that's normal. That's normal.
Look, I appreciate you being very nice right now. it's normal to an extent. In a normal situation, yes, definitely we would have gone out there. But like, yo, we've straight up just went and bought food and just sat in our car in front of this house that's being built. And that was our date. We just did that. That was what we did. I have gone grocery shopping at the new grocery store by this house. There's so many grocery stores in between here and that house. There's no need for me to go and do that, but I have done that. I know all the restaurants that are over there now. I know the gyms that are on that side, little dentist places. There's a drive-through daiquiri place. Like, I know that area so well now.
You know what? I think you're good as long as you don't drive over there, park in front of the house, get out, and then go for a jog. Like you live there.
Okay. See, you joke.
Oh gosh.
No, I didn't do that. I did consider it just randomly when I saw somebody else jogging out there, because it's like a really nice, the way that it's set up for you to run through there is actually really nice, and you have trails and everything. But I did consider it, but no, I didn't do it. I'm not going to do that.
That's what's up.
We should be moving in May. So I have plenty of time to explore more there, but that has been the outside times for me, other than walking around my own little neighborhood at my apartment, getting some steps in. But other than that, there's been some scatterbrain gaming going on. I play Overwatch and Apex Legends every now and then. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like, soon as work is done, I just jump on there and do a few matches, and depending on who is on late, I'll do some Overwatch with them. But with me, I lean more on single player games, and
okay,
I've just like trying to get a feel for certain things, just like feel out where my brain is at this point. And like, I downloaded all these games and none of them were clicking for me. I did Shenmue 3, which was clicking for a little bit, and Total War, okay, a couple of those games, but those were going to be filler because I knew I was waiting for Disco Elysium the Final Cut to come out, which came out yesterday.
Man,
the day before yesterday.
I super want to play that. Not even gonna hold it.
Yes, yo, I'm only a few hours in. I haven't quite reached where I was because I played it before, only about 3 hours, and then I stopped when the Final Cut was announced, and I was like, I'll just wait to play it in that version.
Word.
So now I'm doing it, and it's very, you know, dialogue, narrative driven, very, very heavy on the dialogue part. and but I'm enjoying it. The writing is so good. It's so interesting. A lot of it is going so far over my head, but I'm there. I'm riding. I'm like, give me more of this. It's also a murder mystery, and I love mysteries and stuff like that. And I feel like I don't get enough gaming murder mysteries. So, yeah, in this particular package, I am all about it.
And, that's what's up.
Yeah, and movie-wise, I actually watched The Matrix yesterday. I purchased the 4K copy of that because I didn't own it yet. And yesterday happened to be the 22nd anniversary of that. So I was like, you know what? Let's go ahead and pop that open and watch it. I couldn't sleep at the time. And that movie holds up so well.
It does. It does. I'm looking forward to the new one.
Yes. I'm glad the Wachowskis are doing it. Otherwise, I would have been very scared. But it's... The Matrix might be one of those, like, perfect action movies.
It's up there. Like, it's right there.
Yeah, the first one, yeah. The second one, I feel, is a perfect action movie in a very different way. Because the story, yeah, it's a little ridiculous, but the action in the second movie is pretty amazing to see. I don't know how well it holds up compared to the first, though.
It not well. I'm not even gonna hold you. No. It doesn't. No. It's. I think a lot of what's cool about The Matrix was reversed in the second one. The Matrix. The first one was, if there's slow motion, it's really just to slow things down so you can see it, because everything moves really quickly.
A particular moment.
Right. Or it's because they speed it up to show how fast someone's moving. So like when Agent Smith is dodging the bullets and you see like the after effects of him, it's like, oh, he's moving ridiculously fast. Or when, you know, Neo's doing something in slow-mo when he's running on the walls, it's not to show you, it's cool, but it's really to show you that he's moving super duper fast. Right. In the second Matrix, it was like, I'm going to walk down the stairs in slow-mo just cause.
Right.
I'm going to sip this, whatever. There's literally a moment where someone's drinking and it's in slow motion. It has nothing to do with nothing, but it's, you know what I mean? Like,
totally. And I'm being honest with you. I remember the first movie. I remember everything that happens in The Matrix, right? The second movie, the only thing I remember is all the plugs on what's her face's back and two black people and some people with dreads. And
the twins.
A Cadillac CTS, whatever. That's literally it.
I knew that the Cadillac and the dreads people would at least be mentioned.
Yes. Yo, the twins, if they ever do a prequel, I want to see the twins, because that intangibility stuff was amazing. Like, the twins almost made that a decent watch. Almost.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, and then well, spoilers, if you haven't seen The Matrix 2, and it's whatever. The way they die, I'm just like, like, this is such a cool character. Like, forget Agent Smith. Did you see what he just did? That whole bananas. But let's move on to our main topic. So we can talk about like this stuff all day long, our weeks. One of our main topics actually has to do with Eddie Murphy. And not because of Coming to America 2. We spoke about that in length a couple of podcasts ago. And look, I know some of you are still mad at me that I didn't like the movie. I'm sorry, okay? It just not as good as it could have been. There was so much asinine in that film. However, that's not what we're talking about today. Today we're talking about, or rather we are celebrating Eddie Murphy, because he recently was inducted into the NAACP Image Award Hall of Fame, or I guess that's how you say that. He got an Image Award, or he's in the Hall of Fame. Basically, he's up there with some of the elite black people up there, which is interesting to me, because I thought he was already there just because he's Eddie Murphy. All the stuff that he's done, the records that he broke, and some of the barriers that he knocked down, I just assumed he was there. Matter of fact, I had to double check, because I remember him, he got his star, you know, the Walk of Fame, Hall of Fame star. Prior to this, and I was like, that's really odd. I just expected him to be there
already, be up there.
And granted, I'm not gonna lie, like, they have the greats in this Hall of Fame. Like, they have the Four Tops, They have Marvin Gaye. They have Sammy Davis Jr. They have Ella Fitzgerald, Ray Charles, Sidney Poitier. Like, they have a lot of good people, a lot of big people, right? So yeah, I'm not saying that he's that they need to rush or anything, because they, you know, the people that they put in are big in everything that they do. Mm-hmm. However, mm-hmm. it's just like, he just makes sense. Like,
yeah,
if you're gonna have, you know, Bill Cosby and some of these other people in there, I'm like, you gotta have Eddie Murphy. Like,
yeah,
it just makes sense. It really does. But yeah, he was I want to say this previous Saturday, he was given the award by Arsenio Hall. And, you know, he talked a little bit about the things that he's done, the fact that he's been in over, I think, 40 movies he's been in, his stand-ups. He even made fun of his red suit in Delirious, which I still think is amazing. I would never wear it, but I think that's amazing.
Me too.
And so, like, it's really interesting, though, that, you know, it took this long, and I don't know what the prerequisites are. I know that him kind of coming back out and making two films back to back was kind of part of it. I don't know if they thought like he retired early. You know what I'm saying? Because he was saying that he was making a lot of movies that were just bombed critically.
Right.
And then some of them even at the box office just didn't sell. And so he felt the way and was like, maybe I need to slow down. And so he took some time off. And so I think maybe people thought like, oh, he's retiring. He's not doing stand up anymore. He's not making movies. So, you know, we'll kind of hold off giving him, you know, this praise or this honor. Hopefully not, you know, they weren't thinking like, you know, when he dies, we'll give it to him. But the idea that like, you know what, some of these other people kept going or, you know, or whatever. And so him coming back was like, oh, Eddie Murphy's back. This is a perfect time. You know what I'm saying? So I'm happy about that. I think he belongs in this group. Yeah. And I hope he continues to do some amazing stuff.
Yep. Oh, I'm with me you too. On that.
I think I totally understand what you mean with like expecting him to already be there. I feel like he's had the presence, and when he's discussed, it feels like he's someone that's already in that space.
Right.
Someone that has the Hall of Fame award, and he's in our collective Hall of Fame already.
Yeah. Right.
I felt that way about him for a very, very long time. And I feel like there was a period with him, like you mentioned him taking a break. I'm looking at his IMDb just to kind of get an idea of when that really happened. And it was after he kind of tried to go a more serious route with his acting, which sucks. He only did one movie.
Yeah.
And I remember that one was kind of Mr. Church in 2016.
Yeah.
Which the subject matter for that particular movie, I can kind of understand that one being an issue. But when did the Dream Girl one? When did that one even come out?
That was
2006.
And actually he was for that role. They actually, I think he was up for an award for that role. I believe.
Yeah, I think so too.
In Dream Girl or in Mr. Church?
Dream Girl.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Like a supportive, like people were saying that he did really, really well, supportive. And he can do serious. I just think like, I think he need, either it's, I don't know who was writing the latter films for him or if he was writing them, but they needed an editor or someone to be like, no. think like, you know, and not to cut you off, but like where a comedian or someone who does this kind of gets free rein to do whatever they want. And usually when you kind of work in a box, you have to do things a little bit smarter, a little bit, you know, you work with what you got essentially. And when you're given free rein, you're just like, oh, let's try everything. And unfortunately that doesn't work. I mean, he was in a sci-fi film, like Pluto Nash, I think it was called. And
yep.
He did more of the clumps. He did the, oh man, it was just all over the place with his movies, in terms of tone and, you know, child friendly or not child friendly. And it was rough after a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I feel like he started to kind of water down his stuff. Because, like, I didn't even know that there was a Beverly Hills Cop TV movie that he was in 2013.
Oh, I didn't either. What?
Yeah, it had a different lead. Yeah, it had a different lead, and I guess he made a cameo in that. And see, that's super weird.
Yeah, we can't do that.
I feel like, yeah, wait, no.
No, that's, yeah. That don't even sound good. Like,
no, it really doesn't. And you know what? It makes sense because there was this phase where they tried to take these comedy franchises that were largely Black-led and kind of revive them, reboot them in different ways. Like, we had a Rush Hour TV show. We had Lethal Weapon. And apparently Beverly Hills Cop, all of them bombed because that's a terrible idea.
Very, very terrible idea.
Yeah. If it's not the only way that I could see that working is if they actually did a continuation where the original actors and stuff came in and it was mm-hmm. like a mini series. Like it's not supposed to keep going. It's just like we had more story to tell. And so we're going to do like a 5-episode or like a, you know what I mean? Something like that on HBO where it's like, and mm-hmm. we're done, you know, but like an ongoing show. I don't know, man. That's a hard sell for me. Like,
yeah, definitely a hard sell for me.
Like, good night.
Yeah, I'm good on that. But Coming to America getting a sequel, it felt like, I haven't watched it yet, by the way, but I'm cool with spoilers. I'm going to watch it. But I feel like that one was more, it made sense. It's unfortunate that it's not as good as it could have been, but it seemed like it was more of a passing of the torch or these characters' older story mm-hmm. that I wasn't opposed to it existing. And seeing the list of people that was going to be in it, I was like, you know what? This is going to be a lot of fun for them. I hope it's good, but I'm glad they're getting the opportunity to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of, I still want him to do other stuff after this though, because I've always felt like he was a fully capable actor, not just comedy. Like when, even in the comedies, when there needed to be serious moments, he didn't seem out of place. So it's really weird that we haven't seen him do more things. You know what I'm saying? Like, forgive me for this shot that I'm about to take, but shout out to Chris Rock, another legend. And you know, he apparently pitched the idea for the movie that he's doing now, Spiral, which is the Saw movie, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched the second trailer for that yet.
I did. I think I know where you're going.
Well, it's his acting in that, I can already tell, is very much going to be, this is Chris Rock in this character. This isn't him embodying someone else. He sounded mm-hmm. just like himself doing stand-up. And it throws some of those scenes that they showed off so bad. But I could see Eddie doing that role and doing it really, really well. Like, imagine seeing him in a horror movie
mm-hmm.
with Sam Jackson. I would love to see something like that. So I don't know I don't know if he's holding himself back or if people just aren't reaching out or something, but I hope something happens from this point on, because I don't think he's done. I think he's far from being done as an entertainer.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I definitely want to see more.
I feel like this was almost like just a warming up so that we just see him more.
Yeah.
Just bringing him back to the forefront when he was in every movie every year. That's kind of what I don't feel like this was like, oh, this is my opus, I'm done.
Like, right, I hope
not. Jeez. Yeah.
No, yeah. You're not going to end. I mean, like, first of all, nobody can end on anything right now because we're in the middle of a parallelogram and nothing. So, like, why would you end anything when nobody can be normal right now? Like, no, we need life to go back to normal. You can end stuff afterward.
And even to say that, like, and granted, I don't know how much his films that were being bombed, that bombed, like, critically, how much they made, but Coming to America 2 made money. Based on what they budgeted and then how much Amazon paid for it and any type of residuals that they might have, I'm pretty sure it's going to be sold eventually, like, where people can actually purchase it. Yeah, they made money. And then there's also the fact that where they filmed it at, where they were able to save money on that end. They, you know, because part of it was filmed in Rick Ross's house. A part of it was filmed at Tyler Perry's. You know, he has his own studio or whatever. So like, it's just a lot of good things going into it monetarily. That I'm pretty sure, even if you know, there's enough black people that are gonna like it, that he's gonna get another shot at something. Like, and
there's white people who liked it.
facts.
Everybody, people were who knew I'd say, have you seen it? I'm like, yeah, I saw it. Oh my God, it was such a great movie. And I'm like, are you saying that to me? Obviously we talked about this. I enjoyed the movie thoroughly. I don't think it's not a great movie by any means, but I enjoyed it because I was laughing because it was so stupid.
I think he was like you were saying before, like they looked like they were having fun. They looked like they enjoyed themselves, that they had a great time. Being able to see everybody again, so that's, to me, that was the biggest takeaway. Being able to see all of these people together again, it felt like they were having a reunion and you were kind of a part of it. So in that sense, for nostalgia and things of that nature, that was dope. It was just like, I just need someone to punch up the writing and to not make very weird decisions. But yeah, shout out to Eddie Murphy. I'm glad he got, you know, he's in the Hall of Fame now. I think he needs to get all of his kudos and awards now. Let's not wait till he passed. And also, this is a shot for everyone who keeps comparing him to Kevin Hart. Stop it.
Pardon me? Is this a thing?
There's these memes that be going around where they're asking, like, has Kevin Hart eclipsed Eddie Murphy yet? And when it comes to, is at least when it comes to stand-up, I think the records that Kevin Hart is putting up are actually pretty big. Like, he can actually stand up there with a lot of the greats because he has, like, he sold out, like, football stadiums. At the same time, though, all the stuff that Eddie's done, like, your movies are not touching any of Eddie's movies. You don't have the pull that he has. You don't have the amount of capital that he has. There's so many things that Eddie is outdoing you in that it's going to take a little while. The stand-up might be real close. I think he's number two in terms of, like, all-time, like, the amount of money he's grossed in one film. I think he's, like, right. He's right with Eddie or, like, slightly above him. So he has that stat. But as far as, like career in, you know, all around, I don't think he's there. And so hopefully this award, hopefully this award will tell you that he is not, like, him and Kevin Hart are not in the same ballpark right now, fam. Like, that's not.
Who is these people? Are these, like, young people? Are these, like, 8-year-olds? Like, no, seriously. Like, are these, like, 21-year-olds who just figured out who Eddie Murphy is?
It's the same people who keep doing the Jordan and LeBron comparisons. And it's like, just stop already. Like, let LeBron be great, okay? Like, you don't have to compare all the time. And so that's what it is. It got a lot of black people up in arms. And I'm not mad at it because it's foolishness.
Yeah, exactly. And we didn't even know until now. We didn't know until now. See, this is why I stay off the internet. I don't want to be pissed off. I don't like being disappointed.
Yeah. Everybody.
Why can't we just have multiple black people who are great at something getting accolades? Why we got to put them against each other? This is nonsense.
It's very, very true. But I'm also about to put them against each other. Hold on just a second. But understand, like, Kevin Hart is going to... I believe, if he hasn't already, I think he's going to eclipse every black comedian when it comes to their gross, you know, in one event, selling out a stadium, whatever, his movies. And that's because it's the perfect time for him. It's like, it's the perfect time, and he is much more palatable than a lot of the other black comedians. Like, he's much more palatable than Eddie, Dave Chappelle, even Chris Rock to audiences outside of black audiences, if you get what I'm saying.
Right. Yes. Like, and he's very safe.
he's very safe, and that's not a criticism of him. It's a smart business move on his part. And when you're comparing people, I feel like you have to take stuff like that into account, because he's going to have these numbers, but does that make him better than Dave Chappelle? Does that make him better than Eddie Murphy? I don't think so, no. But I actually like seeing things where they can coexist and joke about each other. Like Dave Chappelle stand up about Kevin Hart.
Right.
And
right.
And about how popular Kevin Hart is, and just joking about how it makes him sick and his kid loves him. That shit's funny. Like, let that exist. We don't need to be sitting here talking about, oh, is he better than Adam Murray? That's ridiculous.
Right.
Like, we can get down into the nitty-gritty details with all of that, but it's just a different world. I feel like a more apt comparison would be the height of another black comedian that was on a real high and then just like
Cat Williams.
Cat Williams, yes. I feel like Kevin and Cat were in the same space at one point where the like Cat has kind of shifted away from that now, but Cat had some, he was not necessarily safe, but more palatable, like a wider audience for a while.
Yeah.
And I feel like he was on Kevin's trajectory.
Yeah.
And then he just went wild. I don't know what happened.
It was drugs.
Drugs? Okay. It was drugs. I didn't want to, I know that drugs were said at some point, but I didn't know if that was like actually the case. But
I don't know. I'm just reading what the internet say. That's why I stay off the internet.
I mean, it felt like drugs to me. it felt like drugs. Like, and like, yo, I don't think I've ever even talked to anybody about this, but like, I was a fan of his, and I hated that he disappeared. So when I saw him on that episode of Atlanta, like, it was so heartwarming to me to see him again on a really popular thing, and him being funny as hell doing that role. Like it was I want him to bounce back too. Like, I actually watched his recent stand-up. It was pretty cool. But long story short, so let all of them be their successful selves and thrive in their spaces, and we can support all of them. If you don't like them, because I don't like Kevin Hart stand-up anymore. I used to
like when he was talking about how short he is and how he doesn't fight people. That's
the way his bank account was set up.
Yes, like that was cool. And like and the stuff when he talked about his family, but it was a little bit more personable. I feel like now he's way too safe, but not safe like in terms of like, I guess, PC. I think he's safe because he doesn't share anything that's personable anymore. He shares very surface level, like my kid said something funny. And I'm like, nah, you had some really heartfelt, even though it was jokes, you had some really heartfelt stuff that you were sharing that I laughed because not only was it funny, but I can relate. And I can't relate to millionaire Kevin. Like, I just can't. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to – oh, sorry, go ahead.
Arthur, one more thing. It might be a little controversial, but I like his movie appearances, though.
Oh, like Kevin's?
A lot of them, yes.
They're hit or miss for me. It depends on the role, because sometimes I think when they let him off the leash a little bit, like when they let him just I want you to freestyle this right here. It's golden, because he has the other actors are laughing because of what he's saying.
Right.
But when I think it's like too scripted to where, like, for instance, the movie he did with The Rock.
Which one, sir? Because he's been in all of them.
No, it was Oh, right.
You talking about the Fast and Furious one?
Yeah, the Fast and the Furious, when he did that. No, not Fast and Furious. When he was in the movie where the guy, I guess he was like a kid that was picked on, and then he got older and he turned into The Rock, and God, what's the name of that film? And he was like a secret agent.
It wasn't Ride Along?
No, it wasn't. That was with Ice Cube.
I know which one you're talking about.
Okay.
The Rock was a secret agent, but he still acted like a high school kid, and Kevin Hart was the popular kid in school, and he grew up to be like, you know, selling cars. But they ended up getting together, and it was hilarious. But then I look at Ride Along, and I felt like he took the place of Mike Epps, and it just wasn't funny.
He definitely not Mike Epps.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
That chemistry wasn't there.
Yeah, it felt forced. You know, so for him, it's hit or miss. I think when he's allowed to be himself, it works. And other times, I feel like they're trying to push him into, like, yo, we need a Chris Tucker here, or we need a such and such here, and so they have him act in that fashion, and it doesn't work for every film.
Central Intelligence.
Yes, that movie was funny, especially the therapy part when they went to therapy. That was great. That was bonkers. Like, if you watch that movie, watch the deleted scenes. And that's what I mean by funny and letting him off his leash. They had to do that scene so many times because he said something different each time. Like, it was great. But, moving on to our second topic. This one is a little bit more, what's the word? It's not as celebratory, even though we are going to try to celebrate, in a sense. Jessica Walker. Walter. Mm-hmm. Recently passed away. I believe that was on March 24th of this year. And you know, it's whenever like one of the, you know, comedians or actors or basically celebrities that you've kind of, you know, you've seen them come from, like, basically they've been around for a long time. You kind of just know that they're going to be around. Like, you know, before, you know, Bill Cosby did the stuff that he did, I was like, Bill Cosby's never going to die. You know, was it Morgan Freeman is always going to be the same age. You know what I'm saying?
And so is Akeem's dad, Jaffe Jones.
Exactly. Right. Like, so when they do pass, it's like, dang. But at the same time, we don't necessarily want to mourn. We kind of want to be, you know, celebratory. Like, you know what? I remember when, you know, that sort of thing. And so my biggest things that I've remember her from was the Arrested Development show and Archer, because Archer is one of my favorite shows. Mm-hmm. And I know she's been in, you know, 90210 and Star. I think she was on Star Trek or Star Wars. She was on something. It's with stars. She's been in a ton of plays at Broadway. Yeah. She's won primetime Emmy Awards. Like, she's done a lot. Right. Mm-hmm. She's just done a lot as an actress. And so though it was sad to hear about her passing, it also kind of made me reflect on the things that she's done, because, again, you know, thinking that these people are always going to be here, you kind of take what they do for granted. It's like, oh, yeah, they're going to be in another film. I'm going to watch it. That's dope. Not thinking like this might be their final film, or they might not even like passing away, just like they might retire. You know, they might want to do something else. So it's like, man, like, I really, it was one of those, similar to like when like a musician dies, it's like, I want to go listen to all their films or I'm sorry, not films, all their music. I wanted to go watch all of Archer and just, like, you know what I mean? Like, just see all of her scenes, because I was like, man, like, it's a bummer. But then I'm like, you know what? She did an amazing job. She had an amazing run, you know, doing all her different roles and being on TV for so long. Solid.
Yeah, I agree. She was in everything. Again, I felt the exact same way. I was like, she's gonna live forever, la la la, like, this is great, da da da. And then this final season of I shouldn't say final season, because it's not the final season, but the last season of Archer that came on, I just remember listening, you know, just listening. And sometimes, you know, when you watch Archer for however many seasons it's been on now, you kind of just start to notice little things. And I know that they don't record in the same place. They're like, two of them are in New York, three of them are in LA, two of them are in Georgia. Like, they're not in the same place. And so sometimes if you kind of just take the time to listen, you can kind of hear editing, you know, you can kind of tell certain things. And that's just because I've watched like the same episodes of Archer probably 15 times. And so past season, I remember watching it. I was listening to her voice and I was like, she sounds tired. She didn't sound the same as the season before. I'm not saying that she was physically tired, but it was just something that I noticed, and it just stuck with me. It just stuck. And I was like, her voice sounds like 10 years older than last year or something. And that was just something that I noticed. But I mean, her husband recently died as well. And so, like, you know, I turn on my phone and I see it's Jessica Walter. I was like, no. And yeah, so I was a little not okay. Just a little not okay. But we did want to, you know, mention her and celebrate all of the work that she's done. She, just like you said, she had a great career, an amazing career. So
she was definitely booked and busy, as the young people say. I looked at her IMDb. I never just looked at the full list. Like, straight up since 1960, every year she was in something. Like, features, TV series as a regular. Like, it was pretty crazy. And like, with my experience with her, of course, I'd seen her and I definitely heard her voice, like, as I was growing up, right? But I didn't start to actually watch for her until I watched Arrested Development. That was the thing that got me hooked. Her as Lucille Bluth was absolutely hysterical. She bodied that role. And that's like, when I think of her, that's the version that comes to mind. Archer, I've watched a little bit. I never watched it consistently. But Arrested Development was it. But yeah, it's pretty crazy to look back at the things that she's done. And she's just been everywhere. And my, you know, it's an assumption, of course, but I feel like for someone that's been around for that long and has been busy, I assume that they're probably a joy to work with. And because, I mean, they've touched so many lives. She's touched so many lives throughout her career. Like, yeah, you hate to see someone like that go, but it is fantastic to celebrate her work. She's definitely a legend.
And it's really interesting also with when you realize that you've been hearing or seeing this person and not know. Like, it reminds me of, I was talking to someone, because I'm a big horror film fan, and I was talking about Nightmare on Elm Street and how I knew Johnny Depp was in it, but didn't know he was Johnny Depp, even though I knew he was Johnny Depp. Like, he wasn't the Johnny Depp yet. He wasn't like, you know what I'm saying? He was still, it was Edward Scissorhands to me. It was, you know, this random kid in this film. It was, you know what I'm saying? But when he, Pirates of the Caribbean, and I go back and I watch it now, and I'm like, oh, wait, that's Johnny Depp. And it's like, I knew that, but didn't know. You know what I'm saying? And so, with her, with Jessica, it was like, I didn't realize that she was Fran Sinclair on the dinosaurs. But her voice is the same. And you know what I mean? And so, like, I knew it subconsciously, but didn't know her until, you know, we could actually see her on screen more often. And a bunch of other things that, like, her having a guest appearance on, you know, the CSI or something like that. Like, it's like, I've seen you a lot. And it wasn't until, you know, later on that I kind of matched the voice with the name or matched the voice with the face. And I was like, oh, that's who the person that I keep seeing. So, like, with that, it's like you were saying about her touching other people, or, you know, so many people. It's like she touched people who view her or who watched her all these years and just didn't know it. Like, you just didn't know that this was the person. And so watching something like Archer, where I'm like, you know, this is animated and I don't, you know, I recognize some of the voices, but not everybody. Hearing her voice, I'm like, oh, that reminds me of someone. And so it was like, there's like a, you know, a kinship there, even though I've never actually met this person. It's just, they've been around for my, you know, most of my life. And so that was interesting, like going back down memory lane and kind of looking at her older work and being like, oh my gosh, I knew that she was there. You know what I mean? And so even though it's sad, you know, I will say that it's dope to be a fan of hers and not know it for all these years. It's dope that she was able to go peacefully. From what I'm reading, it was, you know, it was in her home, surrounded by family, which is a good thing. With so many things going on and so many people, you know, so many tragic things that you hear about, you know, someone passing away in a peaceful manner, is a win. You know, as sad as that sounds, that's a win, especially with COVID and people getting sick and Things like that. It's like, from what their her family has been saying, she wasn't it wasn't a struggle. It wasn't, something along those lines. And so, yeah, man, shout out to her and her family, prayers out to you guys, and I hope that, we can continue to remember her fondly. And I hope that they do her do her right on Archer. If they continue the show, I hope that they there's a proper send off, not just like, she went upstairs and never came back type of stuff. Shows do that. Shows do that.
Yes, namely, what's it called? Family Matters, yeah.
That was rough.
That was so rough.
That was really, really rough. And
Literally walked up the stairs and never came down, ever.
her parents should feel so bad for that. Like, just so bad. So yeah, so our next topic on today's show is going to be about Netflix. And for once, it's not bad. So shout out to Netflix. Now, Netflix is been in an interesting spot for a while because they have been in the red for like for so long in terms of they pay for, the shows or whatever up front, and then they kind of try to recoup on the amount of subscribers. And for a while, even though they were bringing in a lot of cool shows, they were always like just stuck in red. Even though people were like, they're gonna round the bend eventually, they were kind of stuck. And come to find out, and so with them being stuck, you have, Disney Plus coming out and Disney pulling all of their content. You have Paramount Plus, them pulling all of their content like Frasier and whatnot. You have and then HBO Max, and HBO is just dumping all of their films, or Warner Bros. Is just dumping all their films into HBO. So it's like, wow, like you were already kind of, you weren't struggling per se, but you were having some issues, and then you have stiff competition coming out with a lot of content that people want to see. And you can only you only have time for so much, right? But then to find out that not only did Netflix do extremely well, closing out 2020, but they did well more than I thought they could ever do, right? So shout out to CNET and Joan Salzman. I'm actually looking at her article, pulling from this information, but apparently Netflix subscribers surpassed 200 million at the end of last year, and they are the world's biggest streaming service. And just to let you know, if we were to take let's see, HBO Max has 12 million. Yeah, roughly 12 million. I think Disney Plus is around 80 million, I think. Yeah, just about. Yeah, it's not even close. Like they've skyrocketed. And because of that, obviously their stock has jumped up. And I believe they're inching closer to being in the black, which is, I don't really remember when they were in the black. I think when they were only doing the DVDs, like sending them out, which they still do, by the way. When they were doing that service by itself, I believe they were in the black, and then after that, it was kind of like just banking on their subscribers. But now they're just, I mean, they're doing really, really well. They've actually increased, I think, 8 million subscribers since October and December. Yeah, it's so they're up at like 233.66 million. It's a big number, basically, people. And
Perfect.
I didn't expect that to happen. I knew people were going to be watching all these services, just because of COVID. Like, you're at home, no one wants to pay for cable. Like, talking about, there's all these, everyone has like an exclusive film, right? Like Netflix has exclusive films, Disney has exclusive shows. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, you're gonna have one of them at the very least. And but at the same time, I didn't expect Netflix to like balloon like this. I really thought that Disney Plus and some of these others were gonna cut into its market. And Netflix was like, nah, fam. they're like, we've been doing this for too long. And I knew, like, when the CEO was talking about all these, the competition coming in, and he was talking about how it was healthy and all those other things, I'm like, you have something up your sleeve that you're not telling people, because There's no way you're calm right now. Like, especially with them announcing Disney Plus, like, the rates were cheaper. Than Netflix, and Netflix keeps going up. And the fact that they still have surpassed everyone by, like, miles.
Let me ask y'all this. Do you think that Netflix created coronavirus?
See. Terrible.
I mean, we're in the middle of a kaleidoscope right now. And so with all of this nonsense and Netflix making mad money, and it was like they knew it was going to happen. I mean, I don't know. These 5G people might be onto something. And, you know, Netflix.
I mean, they did have mad documentaries up about COVID, like day two. So.
Facts. I watched all of them.
I was okay. I don't know how you did that to yourself. I couldn't do it. I could not do it. But I was shocked though. I was like scrolling through, and they're like, you know, number one trending, you know, COVID or whatever. And not even only that, it was the documentaries.
Coronavirus explained.
It was that, and it was the was it the rom com centering around COVID, like. I was like, Netflix is either they were like, you know what, this is coming, let's jump on this, or they knew it. They move quick.
You know they had to have had a meeting, like when the reality started to set in for COVID, where somebody was like, everybody, it's time. This is our moment. This is it. Just put up or shut up right here.
That one person at the table was like, y'all, this is humanely wrong, like, to capitalize on this tragedy. The other person was like, you're fired. Everybody else gets a bonus. How do we make this work for us?
Somebody in there, like, I can't say that I wouldn't have been the person in there. Like, look, we are doing the world a service here.
Yeah.
Because we are keeping people inside.
Facts. Yeah. Facts.
Like, you guys, we are a verb and a noun.
Yes.
So, how is that possible?
Netflix is they turned up in the right way, and what's crazy is that I don't know how they're doing it in terms of content, because they have so much now. Like, I want to say at the beginning of this year, they said they were gonna have a new film every week.
Yep. Then they're doing it every single week for this year.
If it was gonna be a good film.
We knew it was gonna be a little shaky.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. They you know what I'm saying, five. You know, if they release five, two of them might be fire. The other three, but what was surprising outside of the amount of films was who was in the films. You know, there was you know, a lot of big stars. Like, I think The Rock is in a film. Dave Bautista. You know, they made sure they get the wrestlers in there. They got a lot of people.
They even capitalized on some of the like. Mid-tier stars that are kind of on the come up a little bit. Like, they had a sci-fi movie with Anthony Mackie and the kid that's the lead in Snowfall now.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they had a movie together. It was worth watching. It was okay. It was fun. But, like, just to see the scope of people.
Right. That they have. That's the money. You know what I'm saying? That's not little money. That's money. And I think... their films fit too. If you think about it, even if they're not great, it's like, this is a popcorn. I'm just going to chill. You know what I'm saying? It's not like a big blockbuster. It's just like, I'm just almost like going to Blockbuster, using the word again, but going to Blockbuster and picking up like a B film and being okay with it. Right. It's like they have a ton of that. And it just like, you're like, why not? And then that why not turns into, I'm going to keep my subscription because there's a bunch of why nots here. You know what I'm saying?
Let me get into the Netflix bag a little bit.
Are they short films?
No, these are features.
Yeah,
these
feature.
Are, these are whole feature features. Film.
Like the one that I'm looking forward to the most right now is the Concrete Cowboy.
Oh, yeah.
Idris Elba and the black kid from Stranger Things, I think.
Yeah.
As his son. Like, that looks super interesting. And that one, that's one I feel like... if it came out in theaters, it'd be playing just on a couple screens. It wouldn't be everywhere.
Right.
But I'm here for it. Like, they're spending money on these different ideas and these different stories. And like, I saw an article, I need to research a little bit more. It was also on CNET about how their diversity is getting a bit better. And just looking at the Netflix home screen, I feel like that's the case, just the stuff that they pull in. But one of the things that was wild to me, Disney Plus, when it was announced, right?
Yeah.
The conversation, of course, is going to pick up, you know, is Disney Plus going to be the Netflix killer? Right? And yeah. I feel like people were really out of pocket in that conversation. Because, like, I feel you. Disney's about to open the vault. Yes. But looking at the slate of things that they had coming to the platform, like, people needed to understand Netflix, not new to this, true to this, been doing it for a while. And they have a ridiculous amount. And not only do they have a ridiculous amount of English content.
Yeah.
They have a lot of content from everywhere.
Yeah.
There's so much content that we can't even access here in the US.
Yeah.
That you can do some fiddling and make that change, but Netflix is much bigger than I think people give them credit for.
I HBO, really just add, like told people to crack their Xboxes and watch non-Regis COVID.
I ain't say nothing.
Those were the words I heard.
Exact words. Hey, that I still feel a way about certain areas that Netflix covers, getting all the studio Ghibli films. I still feel a way that wasn't, they straight April Fool's me, and it wasn't April Fool's, because when they made that announcement, I thought it was like for us, and they were like, nah, you not, nope.
Yo, the regional game that's played with licensing is something that, just because of my like a growing interest in like physical media and purchasing like Blu-rays and stuff like that from all over, is something that I'm learning about, and it's ridiculously annoying. In the streaming stuff, they have to play by the same rules. It's so stupid. It's so ridiculous. Like, for instance, just this one, just out of left field, but I know this is a recent example. There's a series of films from a Chinese director, Wong Kar-wai. Criterion released the physical set of his stuff, right?
Yeah.
You can buy it. It's available to stream on Mubi, which is kind of a art house film streaming service, but not in the United States. It's actually a very strange collection of countries that you can stream it in, but it's all because all these the rights are split between all these different people.
Right.
And that happens with every release.
It's crazy. I get it, because what made me get it, I got it before this, but what made me really understand was when Dave Chappelle was talking about telling people not to stream his show because Comedy Central wasn't paying him all the money that they were getting from all these different places. And Netflix was like, all right, cool, we won't do it, because Netflix has built up a relationship with Dave Chappelle. But I get it. I get like how someone could take your content, even though you work with them and everything, and exclude you out of the money, and then send it out everywhere, and they're getting so much money back for it. So I can understand someone, you know, raising a fit and being like, hey, don't show this here if you're not going to give me A, B, and C. And they're like, all right, well, unfortunately, we can't show this in America because blah, 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 blah. So I get it on that end. On the flip side, it's like, dang, like y'all couldn't work nothing out? Like y'all couldn't, like I scratch your back, you scratch mine? Like can we put it on layaway? Like you couldn't do nothing, fam? Like, dang it, man.
It's crazy. And I know the Studio Ghibli, like their license is under a whole other group.
Yeah, it's thankfully I have a HBO subscription, because a lot of their films are there now. And it's like, but come on, fam, like I already had Netflix. It was in the bag already. You know what I'm saying? It was in the bag. Oh man. But yeah, like it's interesting to see. And because I was thinking when they made those announcements, before we found out that they got so many new subscribers, I heard all these announcements, and I'm like, these are going to be canceled. As soon as they drop, they're going to be canceled. All these new shows, all these experimental shows and whatnot that I think are really cool, I'm like, they're not going to go very far. And turns out that they're doing really freaking well.
Got beef with them, though.
Oh, word?
Yeah, because they still have that model. They get you in there with the first two seasons of a series or three seasons. then that bad boy gets canceled because they got your subscription already. They don't need to keep you there no more. They already got you hooked. You're on the drug. You're going to keep coming back. And just, I want them to get to a state where they're in the green, not just in the black, where they can continue to invest in series that aren't like the series that's driving subscriptions.
Yeah.
They're ones that, like, it might have a niche audience, but they don't have to cut the production, if you get what I'm saying.
Mm. Yeah, like, so many they're good not shows. At that point.
Yeah.
So many good shows that that wasn't Stranger Things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's just yeah. like, ah.
Is that show still on?
They have one more season.
They never gonna stop that train.
Well, no, they said they got one more season. I think the actors want to do other things. But yeah,
they'll be called other things.
Yes. they have one more. They have one more season coming up. But yeah, so like, in the sense of this though, what I was getting at too is that it's overwhelming. It's very hard to. They're like, there's, for instance, I really wanted to watch the movie Power with Jamie Foxx. And because it came out in the time where we were just flooded with content, I still have yet, it's still in my queue, which is also how they get you, because there's so much stuff, similar to how like the DVDs would come and they would just sit there and you would forget about it. It's like, I want to watch it, but there's other things I want to watch. And then people are talking about other stuff. And then like, you know, I don't want to... You know, I don't, you know, FOMO, fear of missing out, when WandaVision came on. So I got to watch WandaVision. Like, it's hard to kind of stay up on it to the point of you're just paying to have access to something that you might actually watch one day, which is kind of like, wow, like, how does that happen? Like, how do we get to the point where we might watch something? You know, like, that's interesting. And speaking of which, that's kind of how we kind of got. You know, we were talking about, you know, talking off air about the Falcon and the Winter Soldier and how not all of us have seen it yet. And how it was kind of like just so much content that it was kind of tricky. I guess I can assume that you were waiting for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier to be done so you could kind of stream it all.
You are 100% correct, sir. So what I did, like, all right. So Disney Plus, right? I called this. Like, we got it when it launched. Me and my girlfriend were super excited because I got all these old things to watch on here. We got a couple of new things to watch, right? But I was like, we're gonna run out of stuff to watch real fast. And she did not think that was gonna be the case. But it was less than a month, and I was like, hey, we ain't turned on no Disney Plus in a little while. You know, I'm gonna cancel that subscription because, like, I don't need it. Like, who? I don't pay for HBO. Is it Max? Yeah, I don't pay for Max either for kind of the same reasons. Like, I'll go to it when there's something there for me to see.
Right.
But I'm there's nothing on there that I'm just like throwing in rotation, because like even with Netflix, even if there's nothing new I want to watch, we throw in Community. We throw on Parks and Rec, or used to throw on Office, or just like all these other shows that just can be background noise. Netflix has already locked that space down. These other ones don't have it. And so with Disney Plus, what I do is with these Marvel shows, because I do want to watch them, I wait till they get further into the season, get like maybe a couple episodes away from the finale. Then I sign up for it. I finish that whole season before the next month come around. And then I cancel my subscription.
I feel you. I do that with HBO. I've been doing that with HBO. Like when you know, their shows came out that was, you know, mostly black led, I was like, yep, gotta do it, boom. And then I was like, and I'm out.
Yeah, exactly. You get in, you watch what you want to watch, and then you out of there. And like they want to, I know it's been a big conversation about HBO Max specifically, like they want to address that concern because they have that problem where they can't retain people. And I'm like, yo, you got a long way to go. Netflix has been doing this for a long time. And then when we got to Netflix was the only option for a while too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah. It's that level of comfort there. And HBO, I don't think they need to really try to reach that level, honestly, because there's a level of quality that the HBO shows reach pretty consistently that's really good too.
Yeah.
Y'all can continue to thrive off of that. Disney Plus, same situation. There's families that are going to have a Disney Plus, you know, subscription consistently, because there's a lot of kids stuff on there as well. It's really, really good for families that need some kind of content for their kids to watch.
Of course. Have you guys seen Tangled? Like Tangled, the animated series?
I have not.
Necessary.
My daughters, they love that. They love that show.
It's great.
Yeah. Stuff like that, like stay in your lane. I don't think it's necessary for them to try to fight to get into that Netflix space. Because all they're doing is driving prices up. Like Netflix buying the Knives Out 2 and 3. I don't know if y'all saw that news.
Yeah, I did. I
saw that news, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, those kinds of bidding wars and stuff, like that's just more faces in the mix, because Netflix is already battling with, you know, movie productions that are trying to get these things in the theaters. But now HBO Max and Disney Plus, well, Disney not really. They're not really driving up prices. They're just gonna do their own thing. But
yeah.
HBO Max and these other apps that are kind of smaller ones, like Stars and Showtime and all those subscriptions that are part of other subscriptions like Amazon Prime. Even Amazon Prime is another one that's driving the prices up with everything.
Yeah.
That I think Amazon Prime's probably Netflix's most important competition, not HBO and Disney Plus.
Yeah, I think what Prime offers, just in their shipping side, and
the
you know,
deal is just,
yeah, it's the fact that you don't have to get a year anymore, has also been very helpful, and they know it, like they know it. I think the only thing with Prime is that it's so foreign to older people, in a sense, to where. That's where I think Netflix is going to kill, because Netflix has been around so long that like my parents know what Netflix is, and they, you know what I mean? Like to the point where it's like, oh, you know, we're coming over, we can watch this on Netflix, because they know it's a streaming thing, not cable. For a long time, people were like, I don't know what this is. And I think Prime is in that spot where they're like, Amazon, don't you just buy stuff there? Like, don't you just get, you know what I mean? Like they don't really know. It's mostly the younger people. And yeah.
People definitely forget about Prime.
Yeah.
I forget about Prime, and I like Prime.
Yeah. I am coming to this, the awareness of how good Prime can be. I'm not even going to front. I don't like Amazon, but I can't complain about, the Prime is such a good thing. I wish Amazon didn't suck, like, totally.
As a company.
Yes, like, how they treat people. And it's really hard to get away from Amazon, because you know, we talked about that in a previous episode, where Amazon and Microsoft, they have kind of monopolies on a lot of things.
They have a monopoly on my bank account right now, because Amazon just charged me for membership. And I'm like, I know I canceled all of my primes.
Wait.
Multiple
primes?
Multiple primes. I have two Amazon accounts that I know of. Actually, I have three. I know I have three, but one of them I haven't logged into for a very long time. But the other two, one's on my computer and one's on my phone. And I had free Prime on both of them because, you know, I told you, like, they were giving me free Prime. And I forgot that I also had my sister's Prime, which is on my smart TV. So basically, I had these three accounts, not including the other account that I don't log into. And so that was the one that I watched the movie on, the one that's on my smart TV. But I didn't know it was on there, which is why I put the free Prime, because they had the little thing on my computer and on my phone. Well, I canceled the both of them. I remember doing it. In fact, I should have taken a screenshot. So I went back into my phone to make sure that I had canceled it, and I had. But I saw a charge today that I just got charged, like $119 from Amazon Prime. So they're going to hear it from me.
Usually, the good thing is they're typically pretty good about giving you your refund. So you should be straight, I hope.
I'm going to have to.
I do hope so, hope so, because all I know is that I don't want my Ubers to be bouncing.
Wow. See, this is what you get for gaming them. Like 9 different primes. They caught on. It was like, wait, this is, hold up. Messy Tessie, Tessie Messy, Bessie Tessie. This is all the same person. Like, wait a minute.
That's their fault for not having better people on their teams to be figuring out that it's all the same IP address. That's their fault. It's one router, same IP.
Goodness.
They should be doing better detective work.
Sad. This is sad. I think the I think Netflix and a couple others are trying to look into cracking down on sharing and such too.
They are, but that's such a BS. I really think it's unfair, especially if Netflix is sitting here talking about how they're in the black and they're making so much money, they're making billions off of a goddamn pandemic, when half of people don't even have effing jobs and stuff. People don't have any money. I'm like, y'all need to chill out. The fact that somebody's going to share it with their bestie, just chill out. You're making so much money.
Well, see, that's. They got to make more. They got to, they want to get them blockbusters in. Well, to be fair, they've been losing money for a minute. So I could kind of understand them like, yeah, we're just going to have to stop that right there.
That's their fault. Because, you know, there was a point in time when they were like, they kind of didn't care, because Hulu cracked down on that very early.
Yeah.
Hulu was like, okay, no, like, they're like, you're logged in too many places. Before Hulu even allowed you to have like, 12, which it's not, I think it's like 7 profiles or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're just like, you're logged into too many places. Because like a lot of people who had Hulu, they had it on their computer, they had it on their phone, they had it on their smart TV, they had it on their Xbox or PS, you know, whatever. And then it'd be like, you try to log on to one of them, it's like, you're logged into too many places. I'm like, well, I've got 17 peripherals. What do you want me to do?
Stop hanging.
Now you guys are judging my electronics. Okay. Judge my Best Buy addiction. That's not fair. I didn't ask y'all to do that. Same.
Oh my gosh. With that being said, we're gonna go ahead and end our show today on Tess's multiple accounts. We want to thank you, Charles, for hanging out with us today. It's been a dope show.
Thank you so much for having me, man. If y'all ever want me to come back, I'm down. It was a blast.
Yeah, I'm gonna hold you to that, especially once you start watching some of these other shows. We gotta get you in here to talk about them, because there's some stuff going on, especially with these black characters. I'm looking forward to Riri coming to MCU, and having a black female lead show on the MCU, or just going to be a part of the MCU, I think it's going to be amazing, and they better get it right. That's all I got to say. But yeah, we had a great time. Everybody who's listening, definitely right now, seeing that we're on YouTube, make sure you hit the subscribe and the notification bell so you're up on all the new content that we have coming out. Make sure you check out the special episode that we had that should be going up. I'm breaking the fourth wall. It should be going up tonight. And this episode will be going up probably on Saturday. So, yeah, you want to be up on all the good stuff. Also, you want to know when we transition. We're going to be transitioning soon to other DSPs, whether it be Spotify, iTunes, whatever the case. So that way you can listen without actually having to watch something, because I know a lot of people kind of listen to podcasts as they do other things, and that's been kind of a barrier. So we're going to be fixing that pretty soon. We have some dope stuff coming up. And so you want to be there. You want to make sure you're down. You're not missing it.
Right.
Also, follow us on all the social platforms. We're going to have that in the comments or the details below. And I think that is it for housekeeping. Don't hold me to that, because it's been a long day and I can't remember all this shit. But yeah, follow us and hopefully you like the content. You know, let us know what you thought. If you wanted to talk about certain, you know, other topics or films or anything that's popular right now, let us know. Other than that, Tess, I'm gonna hand it over to you.
Word. So I'm gonna tell you guys the same thing I tell you guys every night, that we're trying to take over the world. No, sorry, Pinky the Brain reference. Sorry guys, my brain not working. All right, so anyway, I tell you guys the same thing, and I just want you to keep doing it, which is, you know, washing your faces, washing your hands, washing your butt. It's just very important that you wash your butt. I just think it's really important. I don't know how much stuff that
it is.
Yeah, it is. So do that, please.
Agree.
Yeah. And don't forget to wear your masks.
Definitely.
Also, hashtag don't be a dick.
We've talked about that multiple times. So everybody be kind. Love your neighbor, but from a 6 foot distance, it's important. Okay. Clearly, staying at home and watching Netflix has been great for the economy. So go ahead and do that, you guys. Keep on social distancing, all of that lovely stuff. And yes, yeah, stay off the roads because I can't get to work on time. We love you. We thank you for listening. You guys have been awesome. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.